This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson, you know, before they were legends of outlaw country, they were lost souls looking for their sound. Don't miss Mandy Moore and the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the rise of outlaw country music and its biggest stars. Hear how one woman's vision in her tiny living room, far from Nashville's Music Row, became the epicenter of a musical movement. Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in The Boar's Nest. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest.
Hey, it's Amy Brown here to talk about St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. For 60 years, St. Jude doctors and researchers have helped push the overall childhood cancer survivor rate from 20% to more than 80%. But we need your help getting that number to 100%. And most important, your support means that families will never receive a bill from St. Jude for treatment, travel, housing, or food. Now, that peace of mind means so much. So join me in helping St. Jude in the fight against childhood cancer. Become a partner in hope and text Bobby to 785-833. That's B-O-B-B-Y to 785-833.
I'm so embarrassed to say this, but my first date with my wife, I pulled the guitar out. I covered some John Mayer.
Why would you be embarrassed?
And I'm not proud of it, but she's got a ring on her finger now, and we got 2 kids together, so it works.
Episode 415, George Burge. These are always interesting, and I say this to George, that if I'm friends with somebody and I do this, it's either going to go great or awful, and sometimes it's both in the same episode. But the curious thing for me in these is always, what am I going to learn about these people I already know close? Because I would ask questions in this situation. It doesn't matter if it's Ronnie Dunn, who we're close with, or George, or I would just ask questions in this interview situation that I would never ask in real life, because I wouldn't be like, growing up, your mom, what did she do? And maybe that comes, but it really doesn't. Yeah. Like a lot of things. So, like, I like this one because I learned some stuff about George here. I had like big parts of his life, like foundation elements that I did not know. Maybe I'm a bad friend because George and I have hung out a lot. Like he's open for me on the road. We've been friends. He's come to my house for like Christmas parties. Like I love the guy. He's the greatest guy, but I've never asked him, hey, were your parents immigrants?
Yeah, I'm surprised. We did not know that one at all.
Crazy. So I'm glad that I learned something here because, you know, George, to most people, is still a very, very new artist. He's got a song right now called Mind on You that's, he tells us, about to be top 20. I got my mind on you and you on my mind. Got these four, you know, when he blew up first on TikTok with the song Beer, Beer, Truck, Truck. Just all you should know it ain't. And it's me trying to convince him, stop being embarrassed of that song. That's constantly our battle. I'm like, dude, it's a good song. I know you wrote it as kind of a joke, but it's a great song, actually. So, I don't know. It's the story of a guy who's starting to get some success now, you know, overnight success, but he's been doing it for 15 years. Been going hard, 2 failed record deals, quit music as far as being a performer. Somehow, yeah, okay, let me do this again. And here he is, and now he's getting his first, like, real shot at it. What were your thoughts after this?
When you said my parents immigrated, I thought he was going to say, like, from Idaho. Oh. And I was about to say, oh, man, we're going to have something cringeworthy here. And then when you said where they're actually from, I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah, I didn't even know, which is – and I felt guilty. And then you hear Eddie come in later on. Eddie comes into the show, right, the podcast?
A little bit.
At the very, very end?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm like, Eddie. Eddie was coming over to the house to work out. And I was like, Eddie, you're not going to believe this. Because – Eddie has been hanging out with George even longer than I have, because Eddie was playing golf with George before George was still inside of Waterloo Revival. So George Burge from Austin, Texas, he talks about that, playing on 6th Street in high school. He went viral in 2020, just doing something goofy. He, you know, has written with Gary LaVox and Matt Stell, written for Clay Walker, Colt Ford, really good golf. He's the best golfer in town as far as musicians that play. He's the best. He won't say it. We ended up talking about it on the sports podcast. He's the best golfer. He may be the best golfer that I've ever played with that's not professional. But he doesn't act like that. He's like, oh, you did so good. I'm like, it took me 9 to get here. It only took you 2. So here he is. You can follow him at George Burge on Instagram if you want to see what he looks like. Here he is, George Burge, episode 415. George was going to say something. I like to preface this by saying that I love George and I love you very much. And when my friends come, and I don't have many friends, not a lot of people like me, but it's either an awesome interview or an awful interview, or sometimes it goes in between because it gets so inside. And we're going to bet this is going to be awful. But anyway, go ahead.
That's a really great way to set
it
up, man.
Thank you.
But that's why we're friends.
What were you going to say, though, before? And I was like, if it's good, hold off.
Oh, really? I was just going to celebrate with you because it looks like at the end of the week, I'm going to have my first top 20 single.
Really?
Ever, man. It's looking like 19 by the end of the week, man.
It was a
long road since the first time I came on your show.
I took a picture, and I just remembered this. And I have to go through my vacation pictures. Don't worry, I was in Italy and Paris, France and stuff.
Ever heard of it?
Not a big deal. But I took a picture of the first time you made the countdown, and I saved it because that was super cool to me. I didn't make the countdown. You did. But to see you make the countdown was, a lot of freaking hard work. And it's hard work for anybody to make it in anything. So I'm not acting like you're curing cancer, but you have worked extremely hard. And I was so proud for you that I took a picture of a piece of paper that I was reading the script from when you made the countdown. And I was like, man, I'm going to keep
this. That's my guy. Thank you, dude.
Because it's somewhere in between all these pasta noodles and Paris and stuff.
But it's kind of insane to think the road to your first one, right? Like, I've been in Nashville for a
Here
while now.
Just kidding. That's the penis of David.
Yeah. It'd have been a lot bigger if it was mine.
Go ahead. I am listening. I just want to find it just to show you I'm not full of crap. Go ahead.
Well, I was just saying, like, it's kind of insane to think the road to the first hit or like your first song that really breaks out at radio is it's a long one, man. And it's been every bit of a grind, every city in America. And to see it like finally start working has been pretty insane.
Has it been a bit too, when it starts to work, is it almost like, you've been grinding at it, but there was never an expectation of it working. There was just kind of a hope that it would. And the expectation was that it wouldn't work, but a hope that it would. That's how my mind always works. Like most things you go after, and I'll go after everything. I have no fear to lose and to fail because I do all the time. But I don't feel like anything's going to work out.
It's this insane dichotomy of like when I started, everything was like, no chances is going to work. But in my mind, I've got this irrational confidence of like, hey, just keep your head down, do your thing. It's going to work eventually. And like looking back now at it, the percentage chance of it ever working, it was basically 0. And I look back at that guy and I'm like, what were you thinking even trying this?
Right.
And now that it is starting to work, it's almost like flipped all the way where I'm not like, I have such a hard time letting myself believe that this is going to happen all the way because I have so much scar tissue of it not happening or so much scar tissue of like not being able to break through that now that it is and I'm starting to see like lights at the end of the tunnel and things working, like I have the hardest time letting myself believe like, hey, this is the one, this is going to happen. Like just keep your head down, keep at it and enjoy it because it's never happened for me before. So
scar tissue is an interesting way to put it because that's what it is. Like you, in a beautiful way, it's just anything creative, right? Everybody wants to do everything creative, so everybody's trying to do it, and everybody wants it, and so it's thundering, and it is raining hard. Can you hear it, Mike?
No.
Okay.
Thunder, yeah.
It scared the piss out of me. I was in the middle of a pretty profound thought, I thought.
It's actually pretty epic on the way that you're saying it.
Yeah. But it's, where you've been through a lot of no, that – you just kind of expect more no's. And when you do start to get the yeses, it almost freaks you out a little bit.
100%.
It did me when I first started to have some yeses. I was like, wait. And then I would get scared to actually embrace it because I would be afraid it was going to be taken away from me.
Exactly. Well, and then you get that. That exactly, right? Like, you don't want to enjoy it too much because you don't know how long it lasts.
Which or is not healthy, by the way.
It's like, oh, trust me, I know. And then the other thing is, like, it starts to happen and you're so used to being told no, or you're so used to it not working, or showing up to play a show and five people being there, that when stuff starts happening, you almost get this, like, imposter syndrome where, like, hey, can I sustain this? Can I back this up? Do I deserve to be here, or have I just gotten lucky and tricked a couple people into giving me a shot? And so I'm working on that every day.
You'll never work it out. But the fact that you can acknowledge it exists is a massive step. I haven't worked it out still. I'll never work it out, but I do have the understanding of, I see it for the most part when it's happening, and I can't change really how I feel, but I can try to condition myself to know that it's not always real. And that's been a big, big benefit for me, but also having my wife, who at times it's very uncomfortable for me, good or bad, where she will just go like, hey, you're not actually being rational right now. Good or bad. It could be something good or something bad, because she's not in the business.
You have to have that.
And and your wife's not.
It's been the biggest blessing for me, just having somebody that can pull you to real life. And, you know, sometimes because all this stuff feels so big and it feels like such an opportunity, or it feels like such a lucky break, you can make a mountain out of everything. When in reality, like, if you take a step back and you take a breath and put it into perspective, like, everything's going to be fine. Everything's working out like it's supposed to. Let it happen. Keep doing what got you here in the first place and enjoying the people around you. And so, yeah, that's been a huge blessing for me, having her around. And I've got a really great group of core friends around me that, you know, we can still talk trash to each other and, you know, and step outside of the industry. And I think that's really important because it gives me an escape to not get completely lost in it. And I think, on my way up, I've opened for a bunch of people in town and I've gotten to know a bunch of superstars, and I've seen how a bunch of people have handled fame and success differently. And I haven't gotten that yet, but it's given me an opportunity to see, like, the path that I want to take and how I want to treat other people and how I want to treat myself and how the people I want to surround myself with. And I think a little bit of that insecurity is good, but not too much of it. So we're working
tons
on
of it. I have a wheelbarrow. That thunder is thundering because my insecurity is so heavy. It knows it's more than a wheelbarrow. It's a dump truck. Okay, God, it's a dump truck. I'm not telling the truth. Yeah, it is storming like crazy here at the house now. So let's timeline you and walk from childhood all the way to here in a pretty rapid way. You're very much a new artist.
Yeah.
To a lot of people. I would even say most people, even though I've known you for a long time and some people may know you for a long time. You know, you're about to have your first top 20 song ever. If no top 20s yet. So that means there aren't a lot of people that know of you yet.
Most people hearing my music are hearing it for the first time within the last 2 months, probably.
So, and not being insulting, but I have to, even with me, I'm like, I got to realize most people have no idea. Even doing my radio show every morning, I have to reset things every day because there are so many new people that are listening all the time. So I'm constantly resetting and sometimes over-explaining to people that have been there a long time. And hopefully they don't get so annoyed that they tune out, but that people that are just tuning in will catch up pretty quickly. So that's what we're going to do here. Where were you born?
Born in Austin, Texas.
And did you go to school in Austin, like elementary school, middle school?
Never lived anywhere else until I moved to Nashville. And it was actually really hard for me to leave Austin just because I had no experience anywhere else. That was like my safety net, my family, my friends, my school, like everything. I knew that city like the back of my hand, and I had never really been anywhere else.
Where'd you go to elementary school?
I went to Highland Park Elementary School in Northwest Austin.
What about high school?
McCallum.
You went to McCallum,
yeah,
huh?
McCallum Knights.
Yeah. For those that don't know, I lived in Austin for 12 years. It's home to me still. I mean, Arkansas is home, but Austin's like home. That's where I spent all my young adult years, and that city really shaped me. And so you went to high school. Then when you went to college, where'd you go to college?
Went to the University of Texas.
Well, you never left.
Like, I never left, man.
You got your little cocoon, and you didn't want to move anywhere.
I'm telling you, it's such an incredible city. I think music and the food and the culture, and it's like it's just like this huge melting pot. Yes, you do have like cowboys and country and everything that makes Texas cool, but you've also got like this influence from California and New York and like, you know, all this culture. Like, it was a really, really special city and still is to me, but
it's my favorite city in America.
Yeah. It's amazing.
It's the best. So did you finish college?
I did. I finished college.
You graduated.
Yeah.
How about that?
You know, barely.
Yeah. What were you doing musically? what stage of your life did you start to play music in front of people?
So, started my first band in high school, like freshman year of high school. Sixth Street is world famous for country music. And so we would play on Friday or Saturday nights. And, you know, our friends would have their parents drive them to shows like down on Sixth Street. And,
you were high school kids playing on
Sixth
Street?
Yeah. I have no idea how cool that childhood experience was until I got out and saw that that was completely not normal. But we found a place. It was a club called The Vibe at the time. I don't know what it turned into, but they were willing to let us put on shows there. And our high school friends would come out. We'd all have X's on our hands, and we'd play an hour and a half set down on 6th Street. And the other thing that was really unique about that setting was we played 90% original songs, just because that was the culture in Austin. Young, they weren't good songs, but everybody wrote songs, you know, and we would, you know, collaborate and go over to each other's houses on the weekends and write songs and have garage band stuff. Jason Carter played the drums, one of my best friends as a kid. Cody Cooper, who also moved to Nashville with me.
Like, what did you know from school? I guess that's what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. They were all went to school with me. Yeah.
And how did you guys get together? Who was the person that said, I want to start a band? I play the guitar. Like, how did it come together?
I was writing songs and didn't know how to play guitar, and I wanted like a way to kind of start putting it all together. And so I met some of the guys that had been like taking guitar lessons and drum lessons and asked them if they wanted to start hanging out on the weekends, and we started writing songs together, and they started teaching me how to, you know, shape a few chords together, and all of a sudden we had formed a band. So
could you sing?
No, absolutely not. Like, I go back and listen to some of that stuff, and it's like, I just want to say a huge thank you to anybody that was like friends with me at that point or like came out to our shows, because it was terrible. Like, it is unwatchable for me if I go back and watch those videos or whatever. But I guess you have to start somewhere. Everybody, one question I always get is like, what was the first song you wrote? And I can remember it exactly, but I'm always like, oh, I have no idea. Can't remember. Sorry. I'm like, that needs to never see the light of day.
What was it called?
Forgot.
You know, it's funny you bring this up. I literally... 2 hours ago, I was just talking to Kane Brown, and I was like, you ever not play a song? Like, do you cringe when you go listen to any of your old songs? And I know Kane really well at this point. Kane and I would say Kane and I are friends even. And he was like, I don't play my first songs. Like, he goes, I no way. And I said, $50,000 at a private party. And he goes, I'm not playing. He said, I can't, it makes me cringe. Then I got him to $250,000 and no phones could record it. And he's like, okay, I'll probably play
it. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
But he, you know, we were just talking about how if you don't look back at some of that stuff and you're not embarrassed, you haven't really grown enough. You should be growing out of your skin so much that when you look back four skins ago, that's funny.
Yeah.
It should be an embarrassing skin because you've gotten so much better.
I haven't thought of it in that perspective, but that's exactly right. Like, you have to be vulnerable and put yourself out there and do embarrassing things to grow, right? Otherwise, you're going to be stuck, too cool to try anything, too cool to write a song, too cool to put out an original song, too cool to sing it in front of people. And the first time you do that, just like anything else in the world, it's gonna be embarrassing.
What was that song called again? The first one?
It was called Security, and
the name's not lame.
Yeah, thank you, buddy. But I think that's a really great. that's all I promise. I'm with Kane on that. It's gonna be $250,000, and $250,000 means a lot less to him than it does to me. But I mean, it's part of it, right? So in a way, I look back at that kid and I'm proud of him for like being willing to like put that out there in front of everybody. But at the same time, I look back at that kid and I hate him because it's terrible and it's everything I don't want to be anymore. So like, I think that's also a good thing because I've grown from there and, you know, I've learned how to get better at writing songs and get better at putting on a show. And I think, you know, I'm glad all of that stuff happened, but it's definitely not stuff that I want to revisit too much.
I already see a couple things repeating itself, and I exhibit some of this too, where with you, you were so naive that any fear you had, you didn't have enough fear to make you not do it because you didn't even really know what you were doing, just that you wanted to do it.
Yep.
And then had you known really what was going to happen... Had I known maybe what was going to happen, I don't know, maybe we would have done something differently. I don't know if that's true or not, but even when you're talking about playing these songs with this band and not knowing how to play guitar, but you're writing songs, like, you're a pretty naive guy, but you knew what you wanted to do, so you're just going to go after it and dum-de-dump, see what happens.
Yeah, I think that's definitely been like a recurring thing in my life is like, maybe not doing enough homework and just jumping in headfirst on things that I love. And
or just having the resources, honestly, that can give you great advice.
Yeah.
Because I don't want you to act like you're not an extremely hard worker in homework, because you are, and you can down talk yourself, but you work and you tour and you're constantly going. But if you don't have the resources or people to really talk to that have done it or can give you advice, you kind of have to go out and create your own advice, and that is through just doing it wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it.
It's
That's it.
And you learn from it and you meet people along the way. The way that Austin music bridged to Nashville was just that. There's a guy out of Texas named Kevin Fowler, a big country artist in Texas, had some national success, but in Texas, he was a legend. And I literally Googled his drummer who was producing his records, and I cold called his drummer and I was like, hey, man, can I take you to coffee? He said no. And then
how old were you then?
I was probably 21.
Okay.
Yeah.
He said no.
Yeah. He was like, I'm just busy, whatever. And then I ended up finding a friend of his that we had that was mutual friends that I found on social media, and had him connect us, and then ended up going and visiting the studio, getting to know him. And he agreed to cut one song on me. He said, I won't do a record. He said, I'll record
one song. But at 21, we skipped over a part here where you're still playing music. So you're with this band through high school?
Yeah.
When you graduate high school, does some of the band go off to college, or do you all four stay in?
Yeah, everybody went off to college, and my live music career took a break for 4 years. I would still write songs in my dorm room.
You didn't play for years?
No, I didn't play for 4 years. I took it off because I tried to play college golf.
Play for a year. Did you think that was gone, or did you think you were just
100% thought it was gone? I thought that was like a fond memory of like getting to play live shows, and what a cool opportunity I had as a kid to do that live music in Austin. But now I got to go to college. I got to get a job. I'm trying to make the golf team. Like that was no longer, that was fun, but not like a realistic career for me at that point.
What? Tell me about your parents.
Both immigrated to Texas when they were like in their early 20s. My mom's from Mozambique, which is north of Africa, or north of South Africa. My dad's from Brazil.
What?
Yeah.
How do I not know this?
Pretty wild.
I don't even know you.
So they were both Portuguese speakers in Austin, Texas.
Wow.
My dad learned to speak English watching John Wayne movies and became a ranch hand.
Pilgrim, you're grounded. Exactly. Pilgrim.
So if you hear my dad talk, you would think he's the most redneck Texan you've ever met. He wears a cowboy hat. He's got a big mustache. Like you would never in a million years. And then he'll start speaking Portuguese and you'll be like, what the hell, you know?
Wow.
But that was unique for me too, just like growing up in Austin and kind of trying to find a sense of identity, because like, you know, they didn't really know a lot about music. They didn't really know a lot about sports. They were amazing, supportive parents growing up in Austin. But it was like, I was on the forefront of first kid in my family to go to college, you know, like
how'd they meet?
They met, they both spoke Portuguese in Austin, Texas, and their families became friends.
So they met in Austin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So pretty wild.
And so you were the first kid to go to college in your family?
Yeah.
I guess also too, I'm just trying to let people see and know that you didn't come from this wealth.
Well, you know, I never want to say like I had like a hard childhood. Like I had amazing parents, and like I was never worried about having a roof over my head or being taken care of, but like it definitely wasn't handed to me, you know. It was,
I know. Do you know
it
Portuguese?
Was tough love. I speak a little bit. Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
Wow, you heard me speaking French last week.
I did hear you a little bit on the air last week. Yeah.
Je m'appelle Bobby.
Yeah.
And that's really all I would say is my name is Bobby.
My grandmother doesn't speak English, and so my 4 years at Texas, I studied Portuguese in school, and then I went and lived in Brazil for 6 months to try
what
to learn how to speak.
What is happening here? I don't even know this guy,
man.
So you,
like I said, I love to jump into stuff, man.
Do you know Spanish pretty well then?
Not as well as I know Portuguese. Yeah.
I found when I was in Italy, a lot of Italian is very Spanish based.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of things that I had known, because all my friends in Texas were Mexican.
Yeah.
Couple Hispanic.
All my dad's friends the same way, because he spoke Portuguese. All his friends are Mexican.
And there's a difference in Mexican and Hispanic.
Yeah.
Right, Mike?
Yeah.
Yes. And so there's being from Mexico, or your parents from Mexico, or just being Hispanic, you know, four or five generations down. And so I was the only white guy. And so I don't know Spanish, but I can tell when these idiots are talking about me.
Yeah,
so I
had exactly.
So I had to learn what was being said all the time. And then when we went to Italy, a lot of their language was based off of Spanish, or, you know, rooted in Spanish.
Yeah.
But is Portuguese the same way?
Yeah, Portuguese is like drunk Spanish. Like if your buddy that speaks Spanish, you know, had 9 beers, that's what Portuguese sounds like. Yeah.
Wow. So in your house growing up as a kid, how was their English at home? Did they speak English?
By the time I came around, their English was great. You'd never know either of them weren't from Texas. They sound like Texans now. But they both learned to speak English in Texas. Yeah.
You go to college, you're studying Portuguese, you're not playing music. You don't even think music's a thing, but are you, you say you're writing, are you writing like poetry? Are you writing songs?
Me and an acoustic guitar, you know, and it was like, it's funny. I think we all go through that like jam band college phase, like where it wasn't like really in a genre and it's more stream of consciousness and it's not like a structured song like it is now in Nashville with verse, chorus, bridge and stuff. It was more just like you said, like a creative outlet, like poetry, country poetry, you know
what
I mean?
Would you play for girls and stuff?
I'm so embarrassed to say this, but yeah, my first date with my wife, I pulled the guitar out and I covered some John Mayer.
Why would you be embarrassed?
And I'm not proud of it, but she's got a ring on her finger now and we got 2 kids together, so it worked.
So you say John Mayer, you played John Mayer?
Yeah.
What song did you play?
I played Comfortable.
Security?
Yeah, Security.
Man, Comfortable jam. Yeah. One of my favorite.
Incredible.
Yeah. From Inside Wants Out, the EP? No, wait a minute. Comfortable. It is a 6-song EP, and you know who's a big part of that was one of the guys from Zac Brown Band, Clay.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was part of John Mayer's duo.
That whole Zac Brown Band is in talent level.
Will you look up the John Mayer
Inside Wants Out
EP? What's it, what is it?
Inside Wants Out.
Is that it?
Look at you, man.
Yeah, look at me. After I said it, I was like, there's no way that can be right. Because
it's a great call.
I listened to that thing. I mean, I burnt the CD up.
Yeah.
It had Comfortable. It had a couple of the songs that ended up making his first big record. And he would never play Comfortable in concert. And then finally he started playing it a little bit.
It's just a songwriting clinic, man. He's otherworldly talented. And he's that unique combination of like insane instrumentalist, but also insane vocalist and lyricist. Like it's, yeah.
I sleep with a new girl I'm still getting used to.
Yeah.
Man, it's been, I haven't thought about that song in so long. Our love was our love was so. Help me out here. Do you know it still or no?
What? I still remember the time at
the market. Yeah.
You walked up beside me and hopped in the
shopping cart. That's it.
Yeah.
That song's good, man.
Golly.
I'm in love with you right now. I'm falling more and more in love.
Hang tight. The Bobbycast will be right back. And we're back on the Bobbycast.
You're playing golf in college, and then, but when does music become an actual, I hate to use the word tangible, but it starts to be a tangible thing again that you can actually do.
It was the biggest surprise. Nobody was more surprised than me that I got to play music for a living. So finished college, got my degree. I went and got a job in Austin. This company that hires a bunch of young kids fresh out of college to do, you know, busy work, live downtown. It's awesome. And that was a cool culture because it was a bunch of people that were moving new to Austin. And I was the guy from Austin. So I was, you know, getting to know all these people and taking them out and showing them the city. And I met a guy that played guitar and, you know, same thing. I was like, well, we should, you know, start jamming. And so once a week he'd come over to the house and we'd kind of jam together, play mostly cover songs, write a little bit. And then I'll never forget, one of the guys that worked with us, his brother had just bought the Lucky Lounge downtown Austin and redid it. And they were having an open mic. And I went and did the open mic at Lucky Lounge and our whole office came, which was like,
oh, you played it. Why?
Which was like 250 people. Cause they knew that I played guitar and they're like, just hop up and play 2 songs.
So they kind of pressured you to do it.
Yeah. And it was, I mean, I was in like khakis and a button down shirt. With like, you know, not
so okay.
Like,
so you didn't plan this out way ahead of time.
No, it was like popped up on stage that night.
Okay, so wait. So when do you hear about the open mic night?
That day. They were like, hey, our buddy's brother just opened the Lucky Lounge. He's going to have an open mic night
will
tonight.
You play?
We're all going to go down there. Will you pop up and play one? So,
and you said?
I said yes. Yeah, okay, I said, cool. I still enjoyed playing. Like, it's something that I've always loved. And so I popped up and I played two songs.
What'd you play? Security?
Gosh, I wish I could remember.
Security. I hope it's security.
It was probably security.
Yeah, awesome.
But then it was, you know, people were like, well, you should start doing shows. And, you know, a lot of the people I was working with were encouraging me to pursue it a little bit more, which was cool. And so a few of us from the office started this band. We started playing, and we'd play Friday or Saturday nights at the Rattle Inn in Austin. And that was it.
How'd you get the gig?
Cold called him.
And said, we'd like to play.
Yeah.
What does that pay?
$0.
Yeah. Tips?
Tip jar. Yeah. And by the end of it, they were paying us because we were starting to draw a crowd. But then it became a thing. Every Friday night, we were playing the Rattle Inn, and it was sold out. It wasn't a big room. It was 300 or 400 people. But it was kind of a cool factor of like, hey, we're selling out this club every time we play it.
What was the sound? At the time, were you guys doing covers?
It was country. Oh, yeah. It was country, and it was covers, but it was like 50% originals. Yeah. Had a steel guitar player, had a fiddle player.
The name of the band?
It was called Waterloo Revival. Yeah.
That's the first version of that?
Yeah, that's the first version of Waterloo Revival. Yeah. And the cool part was we all played for free, and then we split the tips at the end of the night. And we started end up getting to take a cut of the door, and it got bigger and bigger. And then local radio station kind of caught on and invited us to play Blues on the Green.
KGSR?
Uh-huh. And so we went out there and played that, had a huge crowd, and I didn't know at the time, but a big label executive and a big manager flew in to see us play and ended up pulling us aside after the show and asked me if I wanted to fly up to Nashville to meet them. And this is all coming at me like a million miles an hour because I've never, you know, had any contact with a record label in my entire life.
How do they know to watch your show, or were they there to watch somebody else and then see you?
So the guy that owned the radio station sent them my music.
Wow.
Yeah, which was really cool.
Bob?
Bob Sinclair. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, sent my music to Scott Borchetta and TK Kimbrell. Yeah.
That's I mean, it all makes sense. Now when I start to lay it all down in my head.
Yep.
That's how I know. I mean, I know Bob too.
Yeah. So I gave Bob a burn CD with the one song that the producer agreed to cut on me in Austin. He was like, I'll do one song. I won't do a full record. And I will say that he put everything into it, and it was the best sounding song I had at the time. But I had one song on a burn CD, and I gave it to Bob, and he mailed it to Nashville.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
So when you talk about like less than 1% chance of any of this stuff happening and the stars aligning like they did, I never in a million years thought that I could play music professionally. I did it because I loved it and it was fun. But then people are talking about record deals, and you need to get a lawyer, and do you have a publishing deal, and, you know, royalties. And I have no idea about any of this stuff.
Who are they looking at, though? You, obviously. Were they trying to go, okay, Zach Attack, we just want Zach Morris? Or were they going, we want the whole Waterloo Revival?
They came to me independently, and then I had a very close friend that I wrote a lot of my songs with, Cody Cooper, who was the part of Waterloo Revival with me. We were a duo. And I asked if we could come to Nashville as a duo, and they were on board for it. And so that's what we did. We signed
as
a duo.
Moved to Nashville. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And that's about where I started to know you guys a little bit, because Eddie and I, we consider ourselves from Austin, even though Eddie's from a different part of Texas and I'm from Arkansas. We are very much Austinites, like in our blood. And then you guys would come and we liked you guys. And we'd be like, oh, yeah, they're from Austin. But I knew you guys had a relationship with Bob.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that's where all that – that is wild.
Which is crazy because he didn't even own a country station in Austin. And Bob Sinclair, you know, owns stations all over America, you know, big, powerful radio guy. And, you know, I handed him a burn CD. He called me back the next day. He said, I've never called back anyone that's given me a demo before, but I think you might have something. And just from that phone call, I was like, I've made it. Like, we've done it. Like, we've taken over the world. So, I'll never forget. We were opening for Reckless Kelly the next week in Austin. And I called my wife after I got the call inviting me to open for Reckless Kelly. And at that moment in time, I was like, we are famous. We are opening for Reckless Kelly. And this is like, our lives have changed. Little did I know, you know, what the real path looks like.
That's so cool. That's such a good version of that story. That version.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. So... wait till Eddie finds out your parents were Portuguese. Does he know this? Do you speak
Portuguese?
He
doesn't. No.
Eddie and I thought we knew George. We don't know. We didn't know George. Like, we have hung out with George a lot. Like, we are like friends, but I guess we're not.
That's what the Bobbycast does, man. Wow. It's a deep dive.
Okay, so you have to move to Nashville. So you and Cody are going to move to Nashville. You're going to keep the name. Do you guys move up? Are you roommates here? Do you live together?
Yeah, so we lived together for
almost, married?
I was married, yeah. Cody was dating his now wife.
Did all four of you guys live together?
Just Cody lived with me and my wife.
Got it.
And then once he put a ring on it, his girlfriend, then fiance, moved up.
Good for her.
Yeah, that's the right call, right?
And was that because you are on a – with TK, who I know from Toby.
Yeah.
Toby Keith's record label. That wasn't a major label.
So I signed with Big Machine Records. I was there for a year. And had a great experience. But at the same time they signed me, they were going through a process where they were signing a lot of veteran superstars and new acts. So on my imprint, they had just signed Tim McGraw, Rascal Flatts, Jennifer Nettles, me, the Cadillac 3, and Daniel Bradbury. And on that pecking order, we were the bottom, right? And so very kindly, actually, after the first year, because when you – I don't know how well people know this, but like when you sign a record deal, like they own your life for 5 years. Like you're there, whether they want to do something with you or not.
They can shelve you.
You can go to jail for 5 years and your music career's over. Yeah. And one of the more generous things that anyone's ever done for me in Nashville, Scott Borchetta came to me and he's like, hey, man, like we just don't have the manpower for this right now. But I don't want to hold you guys hostage. We'll let you go. And he let me go scot-free after a year, which was amazing. And that's when I ended up signing with Toby Keith and TK and did about 5 years with Toby Keith, went on tour with him, learned how to write songs from him, got to be, you know, pretty close with Toby. And when you talk about – that's when he was – Killing, selling 20,000-30,000 tickets a night, and we're getting to get in front of those crowds.
Wow.
And you know, and that's a whole different thing because we're coming from Austin, Texas, where we're used to playing and feeling like a big sold out show is 300 or 400 people. And you get put out there in front of Toby and it's like, hey, good luck. Here's a catwalk, here's a stage that you've never seen before, and here's 30,000 people that the ones in the back can't see your face. Figure out how to entertain them.
And they don't even want to see you.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter
who you are. When you walk on stage, yes. They have their arms crossed.
They're just ready for you to get off stage.
And so they want to hate you before the downbeat. And let me tell you, that was the best education I could have ever gotten in the music business.
How so?
Because the first 10 shows bombed. I mean, fall on your face. Nobody's clapping. Nobody cares. But you figure it out. You figure out how to... You go out there with no expectation. You know, Toby, when he walks out on stage, if he stomps his boot once... 30,000 people are going to scream at the top of their lungs. I haven't earned that right yet. So how do I go out there and set them on fire and change their predetermined attitude of this opener is not going to be worth a lick, you know? And so you have to come out with energy and you have to program the set where there's no dead spots and you have to mix in some originals with some covers that they might have heard before to make sure you're getting their attention. And I don't have $250,000 to have a pyro show before behind me or an LED wall or smoke. So it's like, how are you going out on the catwalk? Or is there like arranged moments where you and your band are pushing forward? But like you figure out how to put on a show because this is not standing behind a microphone for an hour and a half in a bar anymore. And that was a major wake up call for me that you learned in a pretty terrifying way.
So you guys, at this point, you're Waterloo Revival and we know you from that. Was it, did you ever have a point where you're like, I think we're going to make it as a duo? And then did you have that point where you're like, I just don't think we're going to make it as a duo, like both of those?
Yeah, yeah. I came to Nashville. When you sign a record deal with a label like Big Machine and you see the other acts on the label, right? So I'm coming to town and I'm like, oh, they got Taylor Swift and Florida Georgia Line and Thomas Rhett. And, you know, our ticket's punched. Like, this is it. You don't realize that the success rate on a new signed act is probably less than 10%. I would say significantly less than 10%. And you know, you've got friends calling you from high school, like, holy crap, you made it. Can I borrow money? Like, and you haven't made a dime yet. You know, you're just in town and you've got this team working behind you, but you don't, at the time I'm like, we've signed here. This is it. They're going to do for me just what they've done for everybody else. And then you quickly realize that, you know, you go visit all these radio stations and, you know, you're playing for a programmer in a conference room that's got his arms crossed and same with the other folks, you know, is looking for a reason not to play your song. Like you have to change their mind on why they should. And it was a pretty quick wake up call for me that I had no idea what I was doing. And so then you kind of dig in and you start trying to get better on the songwriting and on the performing side and on the relationship side. And I think I was naively optimistic for my first 4 months in town. And then it felt like, hey, this is a long, long shot.
You learned?
Yeah.
Jumped into it?
Yeah.
Naivety.
Yeah.
What was the most success you guys had as a duo? What song?
Probably Hit the Road, our one that brought us to town. I think it was a top, I think it landed at maybe 44 on the chart. We were close. And we had a little bit of a cult following. We did pretty well in ticket sales nationally. And we had some, had a song called Meet Up in the Middle that was on the season finale of the TV show Nashville. That was a pretty big deal for me when that was popping off.
So you wrote that?
Yeah, I wrote that. And then had a song called The Backwood Bump that was the national song for college football for ESPN for the year. So like we had some stuff that was like popped off pretty good, but we never like made it. Most people didn't know our name. Like it never felt like we're set. And I chased that from 2012. We started it. 2014 is when I moved here, and 2020 is when I finally was like, I've given this everything I have emotionally, financially. Like there's no other angle that I can think of here. And that's when I ended up asking out of my record deal, was in 2020.
With the idea of I'm just going to go be solo, or with the idea of I just want to figure out what I even am?
I had some success songwriting, very mild success, but I knew that that was a passion of mine and something that I had a little bit of talent at. And so I just decided I was going to go get a publishing deal, which is when they pay you to write songs. And I was going to be a songwriter.
Somebody just rang a doorbell. Is that at this house? So if somebody rings the front doorbell, it rings there. Hold on, let me see what's going on here. Really?
Cool, though.
I had no idea what was going on. I'm listening to George's story, and then I think George has something set up, like a big balloon bouquet for top 20 song.
The firemen are here.
Yes. Oh, let me go to security. Let's see. Doorbell camera. It could be. I mean, there's no reason for Amazon to ring a doorbell, though. And they do that crap sometimes. Like, whatever. Oh, yeah. At like 11 p.m.
Dogs go nuts.
And I'm like, dude, just drop package off. It's 11 p.m. Yeah. You don't need to drive. Yeah, I feel like someone's coming to rob my house. All right. I don't know who that is, but. They have a mask on and they're waving around a gun.
It looks like
it's yeah, it's all good. Yeah, my wife will handle that one.
Yeah.
Just let him in. But buzz him on in, Mike.
The Bobbycast. We'll be right back.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots. And Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct-to-consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events. There is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com.
TECOVAS.com. TECOVAS.
Yeah. Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How do the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as the Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts, that's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Backrack as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash, alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer, and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest.
Hey, it's Bobby Bones.
I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the kids at St. Jude. St. Jude's been leading the way in the world's best survival rates for some of the most aggressive forms of childhood cancer. Your support means that families never get a bill from St. Jude for treatment or travel or housing or food, so the families can focus on helping their child live. And that really hits home for me because I've been to St. Jude many times. I've hung out with the kids, played music for the kids. I was in the hospital a lot as a kid. Now, I didn't have cancer, but if it wasn't for people stepping up, I don't know that I would have been able to go and stay in the hospital and be taken care of. So that's why we do this, to take care of others. You can help St. Jude stop childhood cancer by becoming a partner in hope. When you do this, you'll get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. So join all the doctors and researchers, you know, and me in this fight, and just text the word Bobby to 785-833. It's only six numbers, but text the word Bobby to 785-833.
This is the Bobbycast.
To go from being in a duo to it's a different route when you're going to get a publishing deal and write songs, and your livelihood depends on if you're getting cuts.
Yeah.
And what's that conversation like with your wife? Because you're going to, it's financially, I don't know, if you're not making money doing both, it's not a big change, but you're at least, you're going in a different direction now.
Absolutely. And like there's no chance I could have done any of this without her, because she believed in me when I didn't believe in myself. I mean, when I asked out of that deal, I was also like, am I going to go get my real estate license? Like, am I starting over? Like, is this the end of music for me? And she was the one that talked me into continuing to write songs, continuing to chase it for a little bit and kind of just give it one more breath. And so I started writing songs. I put some stuff on social media. I pretty quickly got approached for a publishing deal. And that's like, it's not a huge salary, but at least I'm going to have a check coming
it's
in
consistent.
Every month. Yes. Yeah. I know that I can keep my lights on, you know? And oh, by the way, like, I'm a new dad at this point, right? So it's not just me and my wife that I'm taking care of. And so there's like definitely an added pressure to that. And like, that was a massive, it wasn't a huge check, but it was a massive weight off my shoulders to know that like, I can keep the lights on and food on the table. Like, that's a start. And so I started turning in some songs to the publishing company that I had written, some stuff that I was excited about, and they're starting to pitch stuff. And pretty quickly, a month into me turning in songs, they're calling me and like, hey, like, you should consider putting some stuff out yourself. I think there's something.
Are you cutting the demos yourself?
Yeah, I'm singing the demos. Yeah. And so I just had a, like we talked about, like I had a little bit of scar tissue of like chasing and chasing and chasing and chasing and just it not happening. And so I wasn't sure that was something that I wanted to do again, especially like with my young family at home and like, you know, just kind of starting this new journey. But they talked me into putting some original music on social media and kind of chasing that a little bit. And there had become such a buzz that all of a sudden we had started to get a lot of label attention. And finally I was like, all right, I'll go take some meetings. And so I took meetings with basically everybody in town. And, you know, the first question I would always ask is, how many artists do you have in development? And at most major labels, they would tell you they got 15 to 20 artists in development at a time. And that was, from my earlier experience in town, was a huge red flag to me of like, okay, I'm going to commit here for 5 years and it's between me and 20 other artists that you're throwing against the wall to see what sticks. That sounds to me like another nightmare. Like, I don't want to do that. Right. And so I ended up getting introduced to this new label, which is under the Sony umbrella, but is a boutique, smaller label called Records. And it was run by a guy named Barry Weiss, who's a huge music industry veteran, had broken a million bands that are household names. And I go to take this meeting, and it was just like everything was different. He was like, what kind of artist do you want to be in 10 years? Who do you want to tour with? What kind of album do you want to make, and who do you want to produce it? Like, when you look up in 5 years, what would make you proud as an artist? Like, all the things that you want to hear when you're trying to build something with like some longevity that is true to who you are and not just a, you know, see if it sticks kind of thing. And so they were the first people to really get me excited. And another thing I really struggled with when I moved to town is you go sign a record deal or you go into one of these offices and they all have a vision of who you are before you open your mouth. So it's like, they know what they want you to look like.
Or they
know what
they need.
Yeah, exactly. They know the hole that you're going to fill for them, and they're going to put you in that mold. And when I first got to town, I felt so lucky to be there that I couldn't say no. You know, I'm like, well, this guy wants to invest $1 million in breaking my band. And if he wants me to spike my hair and wear skinny jeans and a leather jacket, I'm going to do it. You know, and looking back now, I'm like, you're such an idiot. Like, that was not you. And that was not your sound. And why are you doing that? And so this was the first time I was brave enough to say no to everybody that wanted to put me in that position. And this was the first label that was like, we just want to give you the resources to be exactly who you are and the artist you are. And I will say, like, probably the thing I'm most proud of in my life behind my wife and my kids is the fact that, like, I bet on that. And in the last 18 months, my solo career is 20 times bigger than anything I've ever done in my life. Doing it true to myself, making music that I wrote that I'm proud of, and not compromising on that stuff.
Is that another conversation with your wife? Okay, well, now I'm going to go back and do what I was doing before.
Absolutely. I will say that for the first time, and it wasn't like a light the world on fire check, but like for the first time in Nashville, like, I got paid. Like, I signed a record deal and I got a signing bonus. And it was like, had a comma in it. Like, it was a start, you know? And so it was the first time she's like, okay, like, there's something here. And she always believed in it. I think it was me that didn't believe that there was a way to, like, be successful and make money and, like, have longevity doing this. And until, like, I saw that hit my checking account, like, I didn't believe it was coming. And then you see it happen. And like I said, it wasn't like a go buy a new house check, but it was a take a breath. Like, yeah, this happened.
Did you have any success when you were just in the songwriting world? Did you get any cuts?
I did. Yeah. One of the guys that believed in me early on was Clay Walker. And he was a big part of me getting the publishing deal coming out of my record deal. We wrote a couple songs together. And he singled two of them, Need a Bar Sometimes, and Catching Up with an Old Memory. And both of those were his first two top 40s in almost 10 years. So that kind of put him back on the map and gave me a little steam as a songwriter and a little feather in my cap. So that was kind of like my first little bit of success as a songwriter.
What was the deal with when Beer Beer Truck happened? Because were you already signed to a label deal, or were you just writing at the time?
I was just writing at the time. I just had the publishing deal, and I was actually with Clay at his house in Galveston writing for his record. And I had told him that I was done with music. I told him I'm just going to be a songwriter. And he was the one that convinced me to put my songs on TikTok, actually, which was
Clay Walker.
Yes, the TikTok
kid. Much older, you know, he is all over TikTok.
Yep.
I don't know if he slowed down a little bit after the whole bus thing, but he was.
That was all over TikTok.
Ride me. Yeah, yeah. That's good. I mean, what a Clay Walker is like, hey, man, hey, kid, yep, you need to get on TikTok.
I was so anti TikTok just because I thought it was like, you know, just dances and pranks and stuff, and not that there's anything wrong with it, just not anything that I saw myself doing. And so he kind of basically, the way that he put it, he's like, you can go get in a van and trailer for 3 years and not get in front of 2 million people, or you can post something captivating and get in front of 2 million people in 24 hours.
So progressive for an older guy.
Yeah. I mean, truly. I mean, we laugh at it, but it is really smart.
I mean, is Clay 60?
55, probably.
Up there near that?
Yeah.
For that to be happening?
Yeah.
And for him to tell you that? I mean, that's so progressive of him to be able to,
crazy,
to see that then.
Yeah. And so I downloaded the app, and that's where Beer Beer Truck came from. And for people that aren't familiar with the
story, it's so clever. Like, don't wash over. I know we had this talk privately where I'm like, dude, you have to be proud of that. But I do get that. I see Eddie walking in. You can just let him in this door. You have to. It's very clever. I'm going to tell the version of it that I think. This girl gets on and she's like, all I ever think country songs are beer, beer, truck, beer.
Yeah.
And you take that and you flip that around and you're like, every country song's not beer, beer, truck, anti-G. And it goes viral.
Yeah. It was my defense of country music. And I do struggle to, like, plant my flag on it just because I have worked my whole life to, like, be able to write a song and, like, you know, have that validation. And you can't control what, like, blows up for you. And I will say, like, I tried to do it as artistically as I could. I did it as a defense of country music, right? She said, country music ain't nothing but beer, beer, truck, and girls in tight jeans. And my flip on it was, it's not all that, right? And I tried to make it this love story of a guy that's, like, out in the country and being judged, and everybody thinks he lives slow and this is all he does. But, like, he's also a safety net for this girl that, like, anytime she wants to come back, like, that's going to be here for her. And it's not just beer, beer, truck. And
you have
so, like,
an unfair relationship with the song.
Thank you, man. Thank you for saying that.
You do. And I tell you this every 3 months or so, where you're like, oh man, that song. Because you got to see how that sausage was made, and because of other ways you've seen that sausage made, you feel a certain way about that song.
Yeah.
That it's not as legitimate as – it's such a clever song. You sing it wonderfully. The production – it's, and when you break it down and you play it just acoustic, because we did some shows together.
Yeah.
It's such a good freaking song. But you don't have that relationship with it because of your life that you spent with it.
100%. It's an insecurity for me. And it's because, like, when I lay down at
that's
night and,
like,
where I want to,
that would be
like
me being insecure about my huge wiener. You'd be like, don't be insecure about that.
It's your cross to bear.
Yes.
Man.
But, and I would be like, I don't know, I'm so embarrassed. But that's the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a, I'm unbelievably thankful for the song, for the doors that it opened for me, for the life that it's given me. Touring wise, record label wise, I've gotten to go in and cut an album because of this song. Like, I'm in a great place, and my wife gets to stay at home with her kids now, and like, and life is really good, and it all started from that song blowing up. So I'm unbelievably thankful for it. But I think my biggest nightmare —
why do you hate it —
is in 5 years, if somebody brings up George Burge and somebody else says, oh, the beer truck guy.
Is that better than George Burge who?
Yes it is. Yeah. And it's also a gateway for people to listen to the rest —
absolutely —
of my music.
Like, you got to stop being embarrassed this song.
Yeah. One,
it's also a good
that.
Song.
Yeah.
But again, you've just associated it with your life and what's happened with TikTok on it, and it being in the video she made, which she was hilarious. And
yeah.
You also made her a songwriter on it. Which
I will
made.
Say that was the most fulfilling part of the song. I wrote it as a tongue-in-cheek rebuttal to this girl making fun of country music. And I DM'd her the day I wrote it and was like, hey, I did this. I hope you're cool with it. If you want, I'd love to make you a songwriter on it because I think I'm going to put it out.
She's a school teacher.
She's a music school teacher, elementary school teacher outside of Charlotte, North Carolina. And she ended up being super cool and saying that she grew up listening to country and gotten away from it, but was like so thankful for the opportunity and thankful to be on it as a songwriter. And so it's just me and her are songwriters on the song, and she gets a check every quarter from it. So that's pretty special to
me. You got to stop being embarrassed of it. If you didn't tell people that story, if you just played that song and you told none of that story about TikTok, about her, about, and you just said, I just have this song called Beer Truck Truck, people would go like, that's a good song.
Thank you, man.
So stop being a wimp.
Fair.
Embrace the fact that it's a freaking, it's not that I'd be like, George, that song sucks, but I wouldn't be fighting for the opposite.
Yeah.
And I've fought this fight for, I don't know, a year now with you, where I'm like, stop being embarrassed of the song.
Man, I appreciate you more than you know for that too, because I do need to hear that. And yeah.
Okay, so.
Let's take a quick pause for a message from our sponsor.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink, shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah, that's what the whole store basically is, fresh leather,
yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com.
TECOVAS.com. TECOVAS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How do the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as The Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts,
That's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Backrack as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the birth of outlaw country music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest. Hey, it's Bobby Bones. I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the kids at St. Jude. St. Jude's been leading the way in the world's best survival rates for some of the most aggressive forms of childhood cancer. Your support means that families never get a bill from St. Jude for treatment or travel or housing or food, so the families can focus on helping their child live. And that really hits home for me because I've been to St. Jude many times. I've hung out with the kids, played music for the kids. I was in the hospital a lot as a kid. Now, I didn't have cancer, but if it wasn't for people stepping up, I don't know that I would have been able to go and stay in the hospital and be taken care of. So that's why we do this, take care of others. You can help St. Jude stop childhood cancer by becoming a partner in hope. When you do this, you'll get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. So join all the doctors and researchers, you know, and me in this fight, and just text the word Bobby to 785-833. It's only six numbers, but text the word Bobby to 785-833.
Welcome back to the Bobbycast.
Let's smash cut. We're laying in bed together, right?
cigarette in each hand.
So I'm on Instagram one night. Obviously, I knew you from Waterloo Revival, and you were like the Austin guys that Eddie and I knew and liked. And,
yeah.
But you were playing a Gary Allen song. I didn't know you then. We'd never hung out other than like industry stuff, and we'd say hi. Oh, how's Austin? Remember that street? You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, 100%.
And you were playing, what Gary Allen song were you playing?
It Would Be You.
And I don't know why, because I don't really watch a lot of music on Instagram. And I remember sending you a message, and the message was something like, hey man, that's really good. You should come play it on the show. Something like that.
Yeah.
And you were like, cool. And so you came up and you played, and you did that, and you did Mind on You.
Yeah.
I got my mind. You ever heard it? Mind on You, beer, truck. And it crushed. Mind on You crushed. And this is forever ago now at this point, it feels like. And I don't even know what happened after that. But all I know is it was like my friend George was gone because he was now promoting.
Well, I can't wait to tell you what happened after that, because I remember all of this like it was yesterday, because it literally changed my life. I was sitting on the couch with my wife watching TV. I had posted that cover of Gary Allen, and you know, like anybody else, I'm sitting there refreshing it, seeing if anybody liked it or if it's going to do any good. And I see you comment, and this is exactly what you said. Hey, this is really good. You should come on the show. And I like double take, tap my wife, pause the show. I'm like, holy crap. Like Bobby Bones just asked me to come on a show, because obviously growing up in Austin, I've listened to you forever. And then we got to know each other in Nashville, but I had never been on the show, and it's a rite of passage in this town. And, to get that invite, I was over the moon, and I was so damn nervous that morning to come on the show. And so we get in there and play beer, truck, and my legs going like this while I'm playing, you know, I'm trying to keep it all together. And I'm hoping that I'm going to get to play Mind on You, but this is not a single yet. I've just released it. Like, I don't know how much time or what I'm going to be asked to do. And you were like, hey man, you want to play one more? And in my mind, I'm like, this is it. Like, this is your chance. Like, come on. So I take a deep breath. I play Mind on You. And you guys were amazing. Y'all hyped it up. Your listeners dug into it. It blew it up on my end. And all of a sudden, we start seeing like all this streaming and all this interaction, and my socials go insane. And the label's like, hey, I think we've got something here. And so they all scramble to make that song a single, Mind on You. We go to country radio a month and a half later. I'm a brand new artist on a startup label with my only other song out is Beer, Truck. And it was the most added song in America at country radio.
That's pretty crazy.
That's insane, man.
It's almost like you were playing a radio music festival and there was a random person in the crowd who flew in because a random person sent them a one song CD.
That's it. Everything that's ever happened in my life so far to get to here, like the odds of it are... When I look back, I'm like, how did you ever bet on that? Or how did you ever think that was going to work? Or how did you blindly believe and bring your wife and your kids along for all of this. Like, I almost get embarrassed looking at it that like this kid believed that was going to happen. And me knowing what I know now about this industry, like, how did you ever think that? But it's just somehow the stars have aligned thus far, and who knows what's happened, what's coming, but like it feels pretty special.
See, this is where I think we disagree a little bit. I don't know that the stars have aligned. I think you would have aligned the stars regardless had it been attempt 300 or 1769 or 6. You know, and there's a way you can look at it and go, well, I got very lucky this happened and very lucky this happened. Or if you're just in there swinging blindly, you swing enough, you fill up the room with enough punches, eventually you're going to hit something.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just some people get pretty fortunate and hit it on their sixth. Some people, they're 1100th. But you're that guy who it ain't luck when it happens 4, 5, or 6 times. It's tenacity. And we've used the word naive, but I would remove it from this. It's belief that if you just do the little things right, the right things can happen. Not will, but can. And so as we talk, and it's, you know, with Bob and the one song and the cage, that stuff doesn't happen if you're not already out there in a place for you to be seen or discovered or to be heard. It's not as if you're walking down the street, someone grabbed you by the collar and said, "You look like you can sing. Sing into this microphone." Like, that didn't happen. And I think that a guy like yourself can be so humble that you can also start to believe that story of, I've just been very lucky. You have been fortunate that it has lined up the way it has. But I truly believe that it was going to line up regardless in some way, because that is the kind of person that you are. And this way that lined up, listen, you feel so fortunate now, but you could be pissed. That, I mean, you did 2 failed deals, basically.
Yeah.
That you just kept going back into.
I'll say that, like, there was a moment in time, and I've talked to you about this a little bit, where like I would catch myself not liking a new artist that had like just moved to town and was instantly famous, or like wanting to hate a song that blew up overnight and somebody is, you know, it's the first song they've ever put out and it's a number one song. And I had to really check myself and be like, hey man, like, do you really not like that? Or is that coming from a place of like you wishing it was you, you know? And I wouldn't necessarily want to take my path again of, you know, 10 years in a van and trailer and playing empty bars and wondering where the next check's coming from and like, is this ever going to happen? But now that I'm not even all the way on the other side of it, but now that I'm closer to the other side of it, I'm really thankful that that journey was my own, because I learned a lot of lessons along the way about myself, about how I want to do business, about how I want to treat other people. And I think it's given me some empathy for people that are just getting started, and how I want to like be a hand up for the next person that's going through that. And it's taught me how to put on a show and taught me how to write a song. And if I'd have gotten the golden ticket when I moved to Nashville in my early 20s, like, I probably wouldn't be a guy that I like, you know. It's given me a chance to like dig in and build roots with my family and like have everything covered at home and internally. And now, if God willing, this does scale, I think that maybe, hopefully, I'll be equipped to handle it.
Top 20, most likely right now. Pretty cool.
It's crazy. It's crazy to even hear you say it, man. It's
pretty cool. It is pretty cool. That's it.
It's
I'm super proud for you.
Thank you.
Everybody works hard, but you're working really hard. It's working hard and having a good attitude at the same time, which can be tough, especially when you have young kids. Which you have to, that's a lot of sacrifice. You're gone.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's not like you're making a ton of money right now.
No.
I mean, you're just now starting to get these good money offers that you don't get to even play for 6 months.
It's within the last 6 months that this has started happening. And it's fun. It's fun. I won't lie to you. It's surreal right now.
And things get easier. Still not easy, but things get easier because people treat you different.
Yeah.
Food's a little better.
It is.
Bus instead of a van. You know, it's just, it's all of that. But you deserve it, man. I'm super pumped for you. So the album is Mind on You that's out. Obviously, the song is doing great right now. You're just a likable dude. I can't wait to tell Eddie all the stuff I learned about you. Eddie, you have no idea, buddy. Can't wait. Did you know George, his parents didn't speak English? They're Portuguese?
No.
Yeah. And he knows, yes, his parents.
He's a regular white dude.
He looks like a regular white dude.
Eu falo português, rapaz.
His parents were immigrants, both of them.
Wow.
And yeah, so man. It's a whole thing. He's got.
That's why we're friends.
Well, he's got two penises.
What?
One in front, one in back.
They weren't originally. It was, yeah.
You guys follow at George Burge on Instagram. Oh, you have a different name on TikTok, dude. What's up?
It's like George Burge official. Something I know, like but that. There was already.
Is there an unofficial?
Burge. Yeah, there was already. It was a weird guy. Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't say that, George Burge, unofficial, whoever you are. I don't think you're weird at all. I think you should not sue me. All right, there he is.
Sue me. It's cool. I don't have anything.
You got nothing. George Burge. George, dude, it's been awesome. We just did an hour.
Thank you so much for having me, man. Dang. It's always fun catching up. And you reminded me of stuff I hadn't thought of in forever.
George didn't even know any Portuguese, Eddie. Yeah. He was like, I know Portuguese? All right, there he is, George Burge. You guys go follow him. He's out on the road. His song's killing it. And that's what's up. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to a Bobbycast production.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop before attending your next concert. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink, shop new styles. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com. TECOVAS.com. You can probably spell it. You probably know it. Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.